You're on WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, June 17th. Florida legislators were expected to vote on a state budget yesterday evening after 10. It is $1.5 billion lighter than the current budget, with money to be set aside for the next economic crisis. This comes after an extended session of 104 days in which the two chambers and the governor could not agree on which taxes to cut. The final outcome is one in which businesses got the bulk of tax breaks, with consumers getting scraps. Of the $1.3 billion in tax cuts, more than $900 million are due to the end of the sales tax on commercial rents. Publix lobbied for this one. It's now up to the governor to sign the budget bill. Ron DeSantis has line item veto power, and he is expected to use it. We may do a lot of flag waving, but Florida ranks close to the bottom of the 50 U.S. states when it comes to patriotism. The reason for Florida's lowly number 46 ranking, as measured by financial services firm WalletHub, low shares of military enlistees and AmeriCorps and Peace Corps volunteers, low voter turnout, and a low number of standalone civics courses required for high school graduation, as well as bad performance on 9 more indicators. The most patriotic state is Virginia, followed by Montana, Vermont, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington State. A couple of children made a bombshell discovery last week at Englewood Beach in Charlotte County, an airdrop bomb from World War II. According to Gulf Coast News, the kids took photos of the object and even touched it. On Saturday, the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office was notified, a deputy confirmed it was a bomb, and residents nearby the beach were evacuated. After an ordnance team from MacDill determined it to be non-explosive, they took the bomb to the Air Force Base in Tampa. A Venice man has been sentenced to 4 years and 3 months in federal prison for owning an unregistered firearm. The prison time comes after he was arrested by the FBI early last year for making online threats to commit mass shootings. The 27-year-old made those threats in the name of white supremacy. The man told investigators he made those threats while drunk. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, June 17th.
Listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. Also streaming on WSLR.org or by downloading the free WSLR app. Support for WSLR comes from listeners like you and from Manatee Spirit Holistic Sound Studio, offering sound-based wellness experiences in Bradenton. More information is available at 941-201-0069 or info at manateespirit.com. This is the Healthy Living Hour, airing live every other Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. My name is Rebecca Acosta, local acupuncture physician, and I am your host. A huge thanks to our soundboard operator, John Dickman, host of Monday morning's Blues to Bluegrass from 7 to 9 a.m. Our goal is to offer a wide variety of topics and guests to better inform and educate our community on current health and wellness issues. As a disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. Further, no one here is providing any type of medical diagnosis, treatment, nor advice. Everything said here is solely for general information and to foster critical thinking. We encourage you to consult your doctor for personal medical advice. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. I just want to say I'm a lover of quotes, and I've had this pink index card on my refrigerator for the past couple years, and I'd love to share it with you, the saying on it. Only the soul that ventilates the world with tenderness has any chance of changing the world. And I believe I have one of these souls with us today. Sorry, I'm probably embarrassing him, and I don't mean to do that. But in any circle, when we bring up his name or his name comes up, he is so highly revered. And just what a great asset to our entire community. And if you don't know who I'm talking about already, I have with us today Dr. Washington Hill. And Dr. Hill is the founding director of the high-risk pregnancy program at Sarasota Memorial Hospital. Today, he is involved in the care of high-risk OB patients, including those with substance abuse issues and other challenges. Promoting safe motherhood for the needy and vulnerable in our counties, he is joining us today to talk about prenatal care in our community. Dr. Hill, thank you so much once again for taking time out of your day after a meeting to come here to be with us. Please share a little bit more about yourself, if you would.
Well, Rebecca, thank you very much for the invitation to come and speak with you this morning. Well, I've been here, and thank you also for that very kind introduction. As many of you, I'm sorry, I've got a little frog in my throat this morning. I'm not sure why. But in any event, I was brought to Sarasota 32, 33 years ago to develop the high-risk pregnancy program, which we did, and the rest, I think, is history. It was an opportunity to take care of high-risk pregnant patients and here in the community so that they did not have to move away or be transported to Miami and other places. And along with that, we have a wonderful team over the years that have kind of pushed for the best in care for mothers and babies. So that's why I'm here, and that's why what I do and what I will do until I can't do it anymore. So thank you.
Well, thank you again for being here. So we're going to talk today a little conversation about current events in the healthcare system, specifically relating to pregnancy care and, you know, pre- and postnatal care.
Yes.
Women, you know, of all groups who want to get pregnant, who are pregnant, and then following up after pregnancy. And we have a saying in Chinese medicine, I believe it goes like this, that women are the container of 1,000 diseases. We're just more prone to so much stuff, maybe. You know, I don't know. But anyway, at the beginning of the year, there were issues with access to prenatal care. Can you share what has been done to increase access and tell us what those issues were and why this is so important?
I'd be happy to. And I think we may have talked about this before. Certainly I've talked with others in the community. At the beginning of the year, January, there was a host of patients who could not get in for prenatal care with a physician or a clinic. Now, the reasons for that are many. One was there was a lack of physicians, and we can talk about that later, or healthcare providers. There were providers also in the community who were taking patients, but they were simply overwhelmed. There's only so many patients that can be seen a day. There's only so many patients that a physician should be seeing in an hour. And they just simply did not have the room or the capacity to take care of those patients. And then one of the clinics, Center Place Health, had some issues along with getting healthcare providers to provide care. So there were a number of issues. So that we found, we being the providers and the healthcare system in the community, found that we had patients who were in their first and second and third trimester who had not gotten in for care. So what do you do about that? This community had a meeting and brought together a variety of the foundations, particularly Gulf Coast Community Foundation, and anyone who could play a role in seeing patients or addressing the issues. We met, and a lot of good came out of that. The Department of Health started seeing some patients. There were doctors who in their offices said, hey, send me a patient, I'll be able to see her. The hospital, Sir Cyril Moore Hospital, started a pregnancy care team, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But there were many other folks in the community who said, hey, I'll step up and we'll see patients. And fortunately, that has worked because now over 350 patients have gone through the pregnancy care team and have been referred to doctors and the health department. Planned Parenthood is doing some of that work. The Pregnancy Medical Center has been doing that work as well. And all of these have helped reduce that number so that now over about 350 or so patients have been seen, and 100% of them have been referred to someone who will help take care of their problem. We're not done yet. There's other good things that are going to come from that work. But I think that answers your question. We had a problem. The community came together, and now we're solving that problem.
And that's, I think, how problems can be solved.
Exactly.
The community
exactly.
coming together, everybody working together.
Everybody, and I've said this before, we're not asking you to love one another. This is not a love fest. What this is we have a goal. We all know what the goal is. The goal is to get pregnant patients in for care, because if we don't get them in for care, everyone knows what happens. Mothers get sick, mothers die, babies get sick, and babies die. So the goal is to do that, and this community is continuing, and to this day, is continuing to make that happen.
Yeah, and can you touch briefly on the disparity, the differences in access to this type of care for mothers of different ethnicities, different socioeconomic
yes.
status?
The key with and your program is healthy living.
Yes.
So the key to healthy living is access to care. If you don't have access to care, you can't have healthy living.
Exactly.
I mean, that's pretty clear. That's not rocket science. So what we have to do is to make sure that folks have access to care. And that's not easy, because folks have what we call the social determinants of health. Probably half of the healthcare that patients receive that will benefit them are from a physician or a healthcare provider. You, me, others. Half of it. The other half is determined by their social determinants of health. Now, your listeners may say, well, what are social determinants of health, or health-related social needs, or whatever we're supposed to call it today? Those are where a patient lives, zip code, work, play, who they love, their religion, how much money they make, their education. Those are called the social determinants of health. Some of those we can determine, but some of them we cannot determine. We may not be able to determine where a mother gave birth to you, whether it was in a home or on the street, unfortunately, or in a hospital or the zip code or where they went back. But those are the factors that you and I and the hospital and nurses, these are the factors that we have to look deep, those other 50%. And then back to the other 50%, all providers are not created equal. If I were to ask you, Rebecca, are all providers created equal? And the answer is always no. Some providers are better than others. Some providers are more knowledgeable. Some keep up. Some have a wonderful attitude and bedside manner. And some, it's not the case. So it's a matter of the health care that we provide. But the other 50% is how do we deal with those social determinants of health? And you ask, well, why does that matter? Or how does it matter with race and ethnicity? Well, if you're an immigrant, then your access to care is not going to be as good as if you live in Siesta Key.
Exactly. You know, speaking of, you brought up immigrant, there's this thing, you know, I think in past years, in recent times, people were maybe reluctant to go to a hospital to get care, even if they had a need, you know, for this reason. There's a lot there. It was very fearful. And can you tell us what certain processes are or what's been done to kind of help this and your maybe belief philosophy on it?
Well, I guess it was earlier in the year, probably early in the year, late last year, there was a statute that said that when anyone went to the hospital, they would be asked a question whether or not they were an immigrant, something to that effect. And I had some lab tests done recently, and yes, I was asked that question. And it posed some fear. I think that that would be the word in immigrants who are concerned already, like today, about immigration status, about should I go to the hospital? And if I go, what do I do with sharing this information? And I and many others said, one, we want you to go to the hospital. Any listeners out there, please go to the hospital. And then the second point was, well, what do I do when with this form? And the answer to that is if you feel comfortable giving that information, please give it. If you don't feel comfortable giving it, say, I don't feel comfortable about giving that information. I think there's a box that you can check off, and that's the end of it. That's the end of it. You will not be pressured. Or you will not be looked at strangely. We'll go on and give you your care. Now, I'm not here to speak for the hospital, but I know that that's the policy of the hospital because I was in the lab and had to get it done. And the reason for that, we needed to make that clear, is that we want patients who are immigrants, any patient, anyone who has an illness or a concern, to seek medical care. That's the bottom line, to seek medical care and not be afraid if you're pregnant or if granddad has chest pain, to go to the emergency room or the emergency care center or the clinic and get that care.
Absolutely. Back to social determinants of health. They've been screening this now in the various clinics and hospitals. And how is it helping our patient population?
I should have brought a guest. The next time you ask me, I will bring a guest who is doing this work. And this work is being done at Sarasota Memorial Hospital. And it actually started with women and children's, because when a patient left the hospital, they were asked, what do you need? How can we help you?
Too broad.
Do you have a car seat? Do you have your next appointment? Do you have what you need for the baby? And it started with women and children at Sarasota Memorial Hospital. Now the hospital is doing that for every patient that they see. And certainly the patient can say, I don't need anything. And that can be, and some of them don't need anything. But then many of them do need something. And then they, let's say, well, I'm having trouble with food, which is not uncommon. Then they are referred to the food bank through a closed loop system that allows them to be reached and to be put in contact with someone who can help them. So that addressing the social determinants of health, and I can't say it enough and you can't say it enough, is so very important, whatever those social determinants of health may be.
Yeah, so I pulled up a list, you know, food insecurity.
Food insecurity. In this community, mm-hmm. we have the food bank, and they do an amazing work and are looking actually to make community connections.
Right. Transportation insecurity.
One of the most common reasons for a patient not to keep their appointment is they didn't have transportation. That study was done years ago. The family may have one car, and dad needs that car to go to work because of finances. And then they have to take the bus. And the Breeze system is good, but it's not the most dependable system, or the buses don't run at the time that they need. So transportation is there is coming down the pike some efforts to help patients with transportation. Healthy Start Coalition of Sarasota County can also help with vouchers as well.
Great. And housing insecurity can be a...
That's a whole program.
That's a whole program. Yeah, that's a whole program. Yeah. Utilities, even just, hey, do I buy food or do I get my power turned off or my water's about to be shut off?
Right. And as you know, there are resources for this. So these are social determinants that many people don't think about.
Right.
They don't think about it. Their lights are on. But when you are vulnerable, when you're an immigrant, there was an article in the newspaper today that a large number of people in this area are living from paycheck to paycheck. And when they have a hurricane, that really messes up their lifestyle and their paycheck to paycheck.
Right. And, you know, just case in point, when there is a hurricane, you know, everybody's like, oh, just evacuate. Well, if you don't have the money to put a ton of gas in the car or a couple car tanks, gas, you know, or what, a hotel room?
Right.
Hotels aren't $30 a night.
That's why the shelters are so very, very important.
Yeah, thank you for just expounding upon that, Dr. Hill. And we continue to see throughout the country, but more importantly in Florida, health disparities in maternal health. More black, and especially amongst more black and brown women that have problems after the deliveries, and unfortunately more die. And you and I in the hallway earlier, you brought up a pretty heart-shocking statistic about that. Can you share that and why this is and what can be done about it? We need to find solutions for this.
No question. The health disparity that you are referring to, and the last data that we have available, is that a black woman who is pregnant in the state of Florida has a 3 to 4 times chance of dying than a white woman. And that is a statistic that none of us are proud of. It's not better throughout the country. There are pockets of states such as Louisiana and Mississippi and those in the Southeast where it's even worse. But back to Florida, we need to, one, admit that we have a problem, and we have, that we have an increase in morbidity, which is sickness, and in death in women who are of color. The first question, of course, is why? And the why is very complex, and I've talked about this most of my career here. The why has to do with the a healthcare system. It has to do with the patient. It has to do with the clinical encounter that patient may have had. and it has to do with the health care providers and the social determinants of health. All of those play a role in that health disparity. Let me just pick one. I'll pick two. One is the healthcare system, and I think it's clear that our healthcare system and our public healthcare system recognizes that and then works hard to cure it. Perhaps not cure is the word, but to address it. An example of that is the pregnancy care team and the community that came together with the healthcare system and said, hey, we need to do something about this or else that health disparity will be even worse. So I think that the healthcare system over the years has learned these are the things that we are doing, and even today and in the future we'll continue to do those things to help decrease that. We're not going to get them equal, but we're going to do everything we can to decrease that health care disparity. And then the second is the patient. our patients have to be responsible, of course, for their own care, but patients hear what's going on. They need to be advocates for their own care. And I was at a Healthy Start meeting, and there was a Healthy Start provider from Port Charlotte area. And she said, it sounds to me what you all are saying, healthcare providers, is that patients should be an advocate for their healthcare. And the answer is, I could not have said it better. Mm-hmm. Patients, whether they're pregnant patients or granddad has a heart attack or granddad is in the hospital, patients and their families need to be an advocate for, okay, what's happening here? What's the next step? You say he's going home. Okay, he can't go home, so where is he going to go? So that patients, pregnant or not, need to be advocates. And they are, and they're learning more and more that they don't have to just accept what is said. They can say, well, why is that? Is there something I can do about it? So those are just two pieces that are important in reducing those health disparities.
Yes, and it makes me think this point you bring up. My goodness, maybe 20, 30 years ago, I remember going to the doctor's visit with my grandmothers, you know, and they were there for an appointment because they had an issue. You know, they had a problem.
Right.
But the doctor comes in and, well, how are you doing, Mrs. So-and-so? Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you?
Right.
You know, it's like, no, we're not here for the
really
church
doing
nicety.
Fine.
Yeah. No, you've got to tell them how you're doing. And we need this communication, and doctors can't, you know, their hands are a bit tied behind their back if the patient isn't really communicating everything they need.
Again, back to healthy wellness. Folks ask me, whether it's a fraternity brother or a sorority sister, what is the best thing I can do when I go to the doctor's office? The best thing you can do when you go to the doctor's office is take somebody with you.
Yes.
I need that.
Right.
And I will go to the doctor's office when I've had some health challenges and say, okay. And she said, you forgot to tell me about blah, blah, blah. And the same thing with Rebecca.
Absolutely.
The best thing you can do when you go to the doctor's office is take somebody with you. There's just no question about that.
Thank you for saying this. I think this is very important.
For your listeners, it's so important. Mm-hmm. And you might say, well, I don't need to take anybody with me. I know what's wrong with me. Yeah, but the time goes quickly when you're in the doctor's office. It goes quickly. And you say, on your way home, darn it, I forgot to tell him about that right breast lump that I felt. So the best thing that you can do is to take someone with you. The other thing that you need to remember is the best thing you can do when one of your loved ones is hospitalized in room 314 is to be there with them.
Mm.
Or have a family member who's there with them. course, you know, we work, right? So Jim might not be able to be there, but you as a family, you talk about, well, Jim, can you be there from when the doctor comes in until 1, and then I'll relieve you at 1? That is so important, because that way you can communicate with the doctor, you can understand the hospitalist system. You may see Dr. Smith this morning, but then tonight Dr. Jones is on, and then tomorrow morning Dr. Sally is on. So you need to learn that hospital system. There needs to be somebody there with the family member, and then make sure that you take somebody with you.
Yeah, this is really important. And Dr. Hill, and I think about a year or two ago, I had a guest on this program, and she was a patient advocate. I mean, that was kind of her profession. And she came into it by this very situation. Her younger sister, who was maybe 17 or 18, had received a cancer diagnosis, and just navigating and all these unknowns and the words they didn't understand and concepts. And so by going through that, you know, it inspired her, or propelled her, I should say, motivated her to learn more about this. Not everybody has those opportunities or time. Do you personally know, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but of any online resources where people can, pretty much everybody has access to the internet, how they can find out more about this or how to do this apart from...
I can't think of any resource either. Right now, but I certainly can think that what is important is learning how to navigate the healthcare system. The healthcare system itself is complex and is trying to make it easier, no question. But also the patient and the family need to find a way to navigate the healthcare system from birth to hospice. That is just so important. I've had calls from someone who says, I just don't understand. And I said, that's because the healthcare system is more complex, and there is a thing called hospice care. There's a hospitalist care, whether it's OB or internal medicine. There's an emergency room care, trauma, and the regular emergency room physician. So it is not easy to navigate it, but I think most hospital systems, including our own, are trying to do it better.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And I don't know of a valid different resource either.
I'd have to Google it.
Oh, and then that brings us to Dr. Google.
Dr. Google.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not Googling Dr. Google to find out what that pain is in my right lower quadrant, but yeah. I'd have to say getting information like a book or something.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And again, in case you're just joining us, thank you for listening. This is the Healthy Living Hour. We are here with our local Dr. Washington Hill talking about women's health issues. You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, also streaming on the WSLR.org or by downloading the free WSLR app. And John has a public service announcement for us.
Yes, I do. And the city of Sarasota is now using the Neighbors by Ring phone app as one of its tools for community notifications through its verified Neighbors account. The city of Sarasota will share important community notices, including critical information during hurricane season. The Neighbors app can be downloaded through your phone's app store. News and alerts are also posted on the City of Sarasota's website, as well as its social media pages. More information is available at sarasotafl.gov or by calling 941-263-6000. Again, that's 941-263-6000.
Again, thank you. Thank you, John, and thank you, Dr. Hill, for joining us live in person today. If anybody has any specific questions for Dr. Hill, our studio line is open. That number is 941-954-9000. 866-941-9454, 866. We'd be happy to hear from you. Dr. Hill, and we touched on this a bit already, but we hear a lot about health equity. What is health equity, and what is our community doing enough, and is our community doing enough to make it happen in the 32 or so years that you've been in practice? Has it been associated in one way or another with safe motherhood in Sarasota and beyond? And if you could also share any positive changes you've seen, and what are the opportunities in this, and also what do we still have challenges with?
That was eight questions.
That was eight questions. Sorry.
Before I forget, I did mention the pregnancy team line. I need to give the phone number for that.
Oh, thank you.
So if anyone out there is pregnant or early pregnant or first trimester, second trimester, third trimester, and you are saying, gee, I'm having trouble getting in to see a physician, or I just have questions that I want to ask the nurse navigator, and there's three of them now, the phone number is 941-917-MOMS, M-O-M-S. Now, health equity. Health equity, an easy definition of it is making sure that an individual has reached their full capacity of good health. Mm-hmm. So there's three of us in this room. So making sure that you and Bob, is it?
John.
John has the capacity to reach the best health that you can have, regardless of who you are, your race, your ethnicity, your religion, how much money you make, your zip code, etc. That's health equity. Now, the goal is just that. But as I spelled it out, we all know that race and ethnicity and how much money you make and where the zip code you live play a role. So most of us, not all, but most of us believe that we should strive for health equity in our communities. That's why we do what we do at the hospital, in the community, in our churches, in our synagogues, wherever we play, wherever we worship. And over the years, I think there's been an understanding that health equity is important for our community. That's why foundations get involved, the Brancic Foundation, the Gulf Coast Foundation, other foundations. That's why they get involved to provide. They provide a lot of other things, but they certainly work hard to provide health equity. That's why you're doing what you're doing.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
If you didn't believe in health equity, you wouldn't have this program.
Exactly. Thank you.
So that's what we do. It's not easy work. David Satcher, a former Surgeon General, I would tell David, this is hard work. He says, of course it's hard work. If it was easy, it would be done. So in this community, we've tried hard to do that. I mentioned the pregnancy care team. I mentioned the work that's being done at the hospital in terms of screening for the social determinants of health. But then you have to get out into the community. And I, over the last 30 years or more that I've been here, 30 years ago, the hospital was not really concerned about getting into the community, and the community was not really concerned about asking the hospital, hey, come on out into the community. But over 30 years, that has changed. The hospital and the clinics and the Multicultural Institute all have worked together to see how can we improve the health of this community. I was just at a meeting with the Department of Health. And they have a whole plan for over the next 3 years of how to improve the health of this community. One of them is better access to prenatal care. Okay? And there are others. such as decreasing smoking. Mm. Patients decrease the number of patients who come in with diabetes to the emergency room. So all of that is involved in improving the connection between the hospital and the community. And are there further opportunities? Yes. And I think the hospital and the community are doing that. Particularly the health department is doing that, looking for ways where we can take care of patients better and improve their health. And one has been getting more involved in the prenatal care piece.
Yeah, that's the beginning of life, of everything.
Exactly.
Is that's where it starts. Exactly. And gives, you know, stacks more cards in the mother and the baby's favor.
Yeah.
Thank you. If I can just mention, I noticed you're a member of the Gulf Coast Medical Society. I had never heard of that before.
Shame on you.
I know. Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, shame on me.
Can I be a member? I looked, you know, I don't have the proper alphabet soup or, you know, letters behind my name, but it looked like anybody can join. What do they do? What is it doing in our community? And
see, I should have brought a guest. Dr. Youssef Adey is the president. The Gulf Coast Medical Society is a local affiliate of the National Medical Association. Now, some of your listeners know about the American Medical Association.
Indeed.
You know about the American Medical
Association?
Yes. So the American Medical Association was formed many, many years ago and is an organization of organizing medicine. And when it was started, it was all white. And there were some brothers probably 125 years ago, and they asked to join the American Medical Association. They were dentists and doctors, and I'm sure most of them were from Howard University. Mm-hmm. And they were told, no, we don't accept blacks in the American Medical Association, and sorry. Well, there were nine brothers. I'm sure the nine brothers said, okay. This is a children's program, so I won't say. We'll just develop our own medical association. And 125 years ago, they developed the National Medical Association. Our annual meeting actually is in 1 month in Chicago. Now, each state has a branch of the National Medical Association, and then there are local branches around the country, and we have the Gulf Coast Medical Association here, and I and others, Dr. Randall Morgan, Dr. Lisa Merritt, started it some years ago. We push for health equity in the care that is being provided locally. The NMA does it nationally. There's a local group, and then we push for it locally. So we push for screenings at in the barbershop and health fairs and whatever we can do to improve the health of folks of color. Does that answer you?
That answers my question. Thank you. And thank you for educating me on this and introducing me to it. Again, I think, like, I'm sure I can't be the only one who doesn't know about this, I would think.
No, you're right. And Gulf Coast is just trying to do what we can do to improve the health of folks of color.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, can you talk about doula services? I didn't know what this was until about maybe 15 years ago. I had never heard of it, and I'm sure. But I see it's becoming more popular.
It's becoming more popular, and it's becoming more used at Sarasota Memorial Hospital and at other hospitals throughout the country. A doula is a person who's had some training, and there are some places where doulas can get training in supporting women in various aspects of their life. There are doulas in labor and delivery who will be there to support the patient during labor and delivery. It's been shown that it may help them decrease their rate of cesarean delivery. It may help them with better care, at least their understanding of that care. And we have doulas in Sarasota and in the area that provide that care. But there are also doulas in infertility. There are postpartum doulas. I even read there were doulas that were in the operating room when patients have a cesarean delivery. I'm not sure that we're there yet at Sarasota Memorial, but we are using doulas to help support women. And it has helped their birthing experience. I think that is fair to say.
Well, and I think, too, I really was into, I try not to watch a lot of TV, but that show called The Midwife, and this is what...
Yeah, but the third person who told me about the midwife show, and someone younger than I said, "You got Netflix?" "Yes, I got Netflix. I know what Netflix is. I'm not sure I know the password." But they said, "It's on Netflix." And actually, someone said it was a pretty good show. So I
really find it worthwhile. It's
I will find how to get to Netflix on my YouTube TV, and then I will call my son and say, "What's the password?"
Now, is that kind of like a documentary, or is it just kind of fictitious?
Well, no. I believe it's based off like a nurse's in Europe and London area.
You're right.
Her memoirs. Yeah. And so it's based on, and it's really fact, such an eye-opener.
It's not fictitious.
No, it's not fictitious. Yeah. And it's very, it's got every aspect, and it's good. It's quality. There's no swearing, none of the things that a lot of us are trying to.
So typical now.
Yeah, the typical, but it's just a good show.
We know about midwives. When I first came here, we had one, and now we have many. But doulas have come along over the years.
And it seems to me that in health insurance is covering some of these services?
It depends. They have a program up at Tampa General where it is, but it depends on where you are, state programs. Yes.
Okay. Oh, I see. Yeah, thank you for clarifying that. And let's see. Do you have anything else to share that maybe we didn't touch on with this?
I think that an important aspect of what I and others do in this community is to help patients take control of their health. I mean, no one's going to take control of my health or your health but you. Mm-hmm. If you decide, well, I'm just going to let it all go, I'm okay. I don't need to get my checkups. I don't need to get my mammograms. I don't need to have my blood pressure checked. I'm cool. I feel fine. Then that's not going to work too well for you. And I think what's very important is for the listeners to say, today, I'm going to take control of my health. And then they may say, well, I can't find a doctor. Well, there are sources to find a doctor. Or it's too expensive. There are ways to pay for that care. There are sliding scale at various clinics. Federally Qualified Health Center, Center Place Health has a sliding scale. Department of Health has a sliding scale. So finances should not be an issue. I'm not saying it's not an issue, but still, I think patients have to know to take care of their health, to get their mammogram, to get their blood pressure taken. This past weekend, on Juneteenth, the Gulf Coast Medical Society, we went to the barbershop. And I have to thank the hospital. Hospital gave us a blood pressure machine, and we went to the barbershop with one of the Dr. Aday and Dr. Ferengi and one of the gentlemen doing PSA screening, and just sat down and talked and took blood pressures. And there was a gentleman whose blood pressure was 160 over 110. He's 38, two children, good-looking, strapping young man. And he said, by the way, you have high blood pressure? Oh, yeah. Do you take medicine now and then? And it was an opportunity to tell him that now and then it's not going to control your blood pressure. And I think that's what the Gulf Coast tries to do. That's what the hospital tries to do. That's what you try to do. And I think that's what it's all about.
That is what it's all about. And I noticed, you know, when I first went into practice, you know, my little practice, and you just want to help everybody. You want to be that, you know, Florence Nightingale. Right. That was my, you know, that's what I wanted. And, but then it was like, after a bit, it's like there was a little bit of an epiphany in a balanced way that I can't be more invested in their health than they are.
Exactly.
And that's where I think, you know, they have to understand, they have to be educated about why taking blood pressure medication consistently, you know, that the fluctuations right. are damaging
right.
in that pressure. And I mean, in anything, it has to.
I tease my doctors because I take some medication and they say, oh, that's normal. That's normal. And I say, it's amazing, doctor, what will happen if you take your medication. Your blood pressure will be normal. Other tests that are being, they're normal. So, folks, it's amazing what will happen if you take your medication.
Yes.
It's also amazing what will happen if you don't.
Exactly. I know people, you know, I maybe recommend a herb, a particular herb, and sometimes they're in a tea form, and they're roots and twigs and, you know, these things that taste... They don't taste great. You know, they're earthy, I call it. And, you know, that the patient will come back with maybe the same issue and it hasn't really improved much. And it's like, oh, are you taking this herb I gave you? Oh, no, I forget. And I'm like, well, it only works if you take it, you know. Yeah, and can you touch on, well, a couple of things, and you brought up a few, but local nonprofits or places of care that people can go to. I was seeing a colleague of mine yesterday. That's who I go to, one of the people I go to for my health care, because I don't treat myself. It's impossible to be completely objective, and I don't know enough about that. But, you know, we were talking about so many families don't have insurance, therefore they don't get health care. And what are places that people can go to for like a sliding fee or nonprofits who will?
Well, I've mentioned two of them. Mm-hmm. One is the Center Place Health, which is a federally qualified health center. They have services for obstetrics, but more importantly, they have services also for internal medicine and for pediatrics. And they do work on a sliding scale. They do see vulnerable patients, high-risk patients who have internal medicine problems. They see immigrants. When I was working there every day, I tell patients I saw patients from every country mm-hmm. South of the border, including Haiti, so that they see immigrants. They certainly are very culturally sensitive to seeing those patients. They are certainly bilingual. And then the other place, who has been doing it for years, ever since I've been here, is the health department. And the health department has obviously a sliding scale as well, and see patients. And then there are others. The Pregnancy Medical Center has a sliding scale. Planned Parenthood has a sliding scale for patients who may need birth control. So there are places in town who one can go to and talk to the providers and to the clinics, and they will help them out with getting their care. I think all the places I mentioned are in it to help patients be healthy.
Absolutely. And I will go back. I made a little social media post about this upcoming interview, and I'll be putting their links in
sure.
the comment section
yes.
of those
yeah.
to get that awareness yeah. out. And lastly, Dr. Hill, do you have any doable advice or health tips for women who are considering, you know, starting a family, becoming pregnant, or those who are pregnant? What are simple things that things you commonly see maybe in clinical practice that, you know, it's kind of like the common things you tell these women?
That's a great question. Excuse me, and I'm glad you asked it. Another thing that I do is I'm a part of a group that reviews maternal mortality cases from throughout the state. And I think we have another group called Fetal Infant Mortality Review, where we review fetus and neonatal deaths. And frequently, one of the first recommendations is that women, before they get pregnant, should be in the best health possible. There's just no question. Pregnancy should not occur by accident. Pregnancy should occur because I am in the best health that I can be in at this time, and now let's have a baby. So I think that the best recommendation, or as a friend said to me, the bestest recommendation is to be in the best health possible, whether it's weight or emotional, or it doesn't have to be finances, but get yourself in the best health and talk to a doctor before then and make sure that your issues are addressed. And then once you're pregnant, listen to your body. You know your body better than anyone else. Rebecca knows her body better than I. You know your body better than I, and I know my body. And we just have to say, something's wrong. I'm pregnant and something's wrong. And then find a doctor who you can communicate with. Advocate for yourself. If you can't advocate for yourself with that doctor, find another doctor. Right? But advocate for yourself during your pregnancy.
Yeah, thank you. And I think when getting yourself, I mean, I do a lot of what I consider to be preconception planning,
Very good. You know,
in my clinic, looking at lab work, you know, just fixing simple things, any patterns of anemia.
Yes. Big problem when pregnant.
Big problem. Yeah. Any, like, certain vitamin deficiencies, B12. We can look at the RDW in a complete blood count and see maybe what their B12 status is. Mm-hmm. And just simple nutrient deficiencies that are common because our food has changed in the last 100 years. You know, it's
sure.
very different.
Sure.
So there's so many just simple things that patients can do to have a healthier pregnancy, healthier baby.
Right. And that's what we're trying to do. And it's called safe motherhood. And I was at a meeting the other day and I said, this was not a good idea. And whether it was from the provider or the patient, and it all has to do with safe motherhood. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Hill. Thank you again for being here today and joining me once again. I hope to have you on again and maybe with...
I'll probably bring a guest.
Bring a guest. thank you so much. Again, you are listening to the Healthy Living Hour on WSLR. Next Tuesday, join us at this same time to hear from Julie and Jono of Our Changing Environment. In the meantime, take good care of your health, and please stay tuned for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!